Today's Teisho will be on case 73 in the Book of Serenity. Case 73 is entitled Cao Shan's Fulfillment of Filial Piety. Lurking in the grasses, sticking to the trees, one turns into a spirit. Being constrained and unjustly punished, one becomes a ghostly curse. When calling it, you burn paper money and present a horse. When repelling it, you curse water and write charms. How can you get peace in the family? Case: a monk asked Cao Shan, how is it when the mourning clothes are not worn? Cao Shan said, today, Cao Shan's filial duty is fulfilled. The monk said, how about after the fulfillment of filial duty? Cao Shan said, Cao Shan likes to get falling down drunk. Verse, the pure household has no neighbors. For long years, staying in sweeping, not admitting any dust, where the light turns, tilts the moon, remaining at dawn. When the forms of the hexagram are distinguished, then are established dawn and spring. Having freshly fulfilled filial duty, then one meets the spring, walking drunk, singing crazily, turban hanging down, ambling with tousled hair, who cares? In great peace, with no concerns, a man falling down drunk. So this is the final day of our August 2023 Sesshin. And everybody once again is doing a wonderful job, really, really sitting deeply and coming into Dokusan with wonderful responses. Good work. And we have, we have until 6 o'clock today. A lot can be accomplished in 8 hours, please continue this wonderful, wonderful practice. It's this morning, the Zendo was so still. It was just amazing. And online too, I could see people not moving a muscle for an hour and a half. Really wonderful practice. This koan is very much embedded in Chinese culture, right? A monk asked Cao Shan, how is it when mourning clothes are not worn? So, I'm sure you know that in Chinese culture, because of Confucianism especially, but for many reasons, that there's this concept of filial piety, right? We have something like this in the United States too. It's not quite as sophisticated as the Chinese version, but our politics, you'll hear politicians talking about family values, right? And so a family is a basic building block of human society everywhere in the world. In Confucian thinking, the family was very, very important, right? So the idea was that you owe your life to your parents, right? And you owe them an unrepayable debt for your life, and that basically to be a good person is to try to repay that debt by being a good son or a good daughter, a dutiful son or a dutiful daughter. And in China at one time, people thought of the emperor as a kind of father to the family of the nation, right? Like the Middle Kingdom was a big family and the emperor was the father. So, the empire is a family, the emperor is the father, and every family that's like all these families under the big family, And the father is kind of like the emperor of the family, and so on. So that was sort of how people saw things. In the West, we have some similar thinking, also. If you read the Bible, you read the first five books of the Bible, and you'll notice that there are these figures called patriarchs, and they're powerful men who have extended families and slaves and lots of livestock, and basically they're masters of their own fate, right? So there's a similar kind of idea here, right? In both of these, East and West, right? But in Chinese culture, this idea of filial piety was quite powerful, maybe even more powerful than family values here in the West, it's interesting. I've often talked with extraordinary, I really can't express my admiration enough for Xu Yun, the great Chinese Chan master who died in the 1950s. And was 120 years old, died like Joshua was supposed to have lived to be 122. So he tied Joshua's record. But it's pretty well documented that Xu Yun really did live that long. There were very careful records of his birth taken, and that his birth happened before the American Civil War. And he lived to be extraordinarily old, but his claim to fame is not that he was extraordinarily old. He was really, without a doubt, the greatest Zen practitioner in the last, 500 years, probably since Hanshan, since a silly mountain in the Ming Dynasty, right? So I urge you to read up on Xu Yun because he's just such an amazing person and practitioner. When Xu Yun was a young man, he wanted to join the Sangha. He was very interested in Buddhism, and he was reading a lot of Buddhist books and practicing meditation. This is like as a teenager. And his father was a government official and was horrified by this idea that his son was going to become a Buddhist monk. He wanted his son to be a gentleman and get a gentleman's education and marry preferably at least once, but possibly more than once, and have lots of children. And this is very much part of Chinese culture, or was part until the one-child policy on the mainland. And he was so terrified that he married Xu Yun when Xu Yun was 18 years old, to two beautiful girls. So basically he wanted his son to have two wives. And Xu Yun was so determined to be a monk that he basically sat down with his two wives and he said, "Listen, I don't want to be your husband. I don't want to have children, and I don't want to have sexual relations with you. I want to be a celibate monk." And he said, "You're nice people, but this is just what I want to do with my life." And they actually understood. He got them very interested in Buddhism. And they both became, nuns, right? And one of them became quite a famous nun in her own right. So when Xu Yun's father died, they parted company. The women went to a convent and he went into the monastic system. However, this was a real problem for Xu Yun. He was troubled by his lack of filial piety. It bothered him that he had done something that his father didn't want him to do. And he went on a number of pilgrimages, actually. And these pilgrimages were not sightseeing tours. They were really like, you could say, he was trying to atone for or get right in his heart for not doing what his father wanted him to do. And eventually, I think he came to terms with his decision. I think he realized that he had made the right decision. And you know, many people say that the survival of Buddhism in China is all because of in mainland China, is all because of Xu Yun. You know, he was extraordinarily influential in his lifetime. When he would do sesshin, thousands of people would come. And, you know, you would have a core of people who were practicing sesshin for 7 days. And then you would have people from all over China coming and maybe participating a little bit, coming to sit for a while, for a day or for hours, and going home inspired by his life, right? So there, you know, there's a tension in Buddhism, it just is, between the life of practice and the life in the world, right? There really is. And there's no denying it, right? In fact, it has to be there, right? It has to be there. If Xu Yun had acceded to his father's request, he wouldn't have become the deeply awakened person that he became. And if he hadn't become the deeply awakened person that he became, who knows what would have happened? You know, there were a number of, during the very terrible time of the Japanese invasion of China, Xu Yun's, a number of military figures and political leaders came to see Xu Yun and asked for advice. And, you know, he gave them really good advice about how to take care of people and, you know, the welfare of everybody. And he inspired a lot of people to be better people, you know. So I always think of him as sort of a model of the Dharma, right, you know. And, you know, he had to leave home. He had to, you know, I started this sesshin talking about day one of sesshin is leaving home. You know, we're not celibate monks living in a temple, but, you know, in order to practice Zen, you have to leave home. In order to practice the Dharma, you have to leave home. You know, when you come to sesshin, you're leaving home. Even if you're sitting in a room at home right now on the screen, you have to leave home, even if it's only for an hour. Right, you have to set that world aside, and in sesshin, if you come in person, it's actually a physical break. Right, you leave your family, your loved ones behind, and it's like you become a monk or a nun for 5 days or 7 days, and live a monastic life for that time, and everything is changed by doing that. Right, it's like, you know, living in the world is a mix of, you know, happiness and sadness, wisdom and folly, nourishment and poison, all mixed together, right? And, you know, when you come to sesshin, what you do is you're closing the door on that life for a little while. And, you know, you're reformulating your vasana, your energy habits. And it feels, you know, like a break, because it is a break. It's a break, you know. You're getting up at 4:30 in the morning. You're coming into the Zendo at 5. You're tired. You know, this is not my, you might say, this is not my normal sleep schedule. You know, I don't feel like myself. It's like, oh, you know, thank God, right? I mean, that's why you came to sesshin, so you wouldn't feel like yourself. So you know, there's a break, you know, just to practice Zen, you have to say no sometimes to the world. You have to do it. And if you don't do it, you can't practice, you know. And you don't have to be a celibate monk or nun, but you do have to say no sometime. You have to create a separation between yourself, and you have to close it. You have to say, I'm sorry, but, you know, Wednesday nights are reserved for meditation. I'm sorry. You know, and you close the door. And everybody might think, but what an unsociable person you are. You know, what you, but you have to do it, right? Because, you know, actually, you know, it's our way of life is not a healthy way of life, right? It's just not. You know, we're heading to an ecological catastrophe, but on so many levels, our way of life is not a healthy way of life. And it's not a particularly a benevolent or sane society. And if you trust your society, if you obey your society too much, you know, you will not achieve wisdom, is the Buddhist view, right? So if you say, okay, basically, our world, our reality is reality. You know, my job is to fit into that reality. That is not the path to wisdom, according to the Buddhist view. You know, the world is a place where we talked about the red dust, right? The world of the red dust is not the place where wisdom takes root. And it's definitely true that you will meet people who have never done meditation a day in their lives and have never heard of Buddhism, and they're wise and generous and kind people. That's absolutely so. But, you know, somehow they've found a way to say no to the society. You know, I don't know how they do it. Maybe they just have a strong character, or they're able to tune things out, right? It's hard to say how such people appear in the world, but they're sort of like spontaneous bodhisattvas. But they must have some secret to creating a boundary between themselves and this world, or they wouldn't be such good people. Because the society is, you know, clearly it has its good points and its bad points, but it's not a place where wisdom reigns supreme, right, very often. So this is actually a koan about this issue. In China, you know, basically, one of the things that Buddhism was often criticized for is that it wasn't filial. In other words, you know, your job as a son is to get married and have children and continue the family. And your job as a wife is to marry and have those children and be a dutiful wife, right? And so if you, in China, you decided to become a monk or a nun, you didn't do those things. That's like almost like a crime, right? So anyway, this koan is you know, when your parents die, in as I understand Chinese tradition, I'm certainly not well informed. But, you know, traditionally, there was a ritual of mourning. People would wear, in the old days, burlap clothes, right? Like mourning clothes. And burlap is like flax, like three chin of flax. Burlap is the crudest kind of flax cloth. So, you know, basically, you would wear mourning clothes at the grave site, right? And this is another symbol of your or expression of your commitment to being a filial child. And so a monk says to Master Kaoshan, how is it when the mourning clothes are not worn? So what he says basically, Master Kaoshan, what would you say about somebody who didn't put on mourning clothes when his parents or a parent has died? What would you say about such a person? So the conventional answer would be, that person is a monster, right? He's a moral monster. Who would not mourn the death of his family, you know, his parents? What a terrible person, what a horrible person, see? He's not filial. Okay, but Kaohsiung says that he says today Kaohsiung's filial duty is fulfilled. See. So what he's saying is when you are disobedient, you are actually fulfilling your filial duty. See. So it's like that's the koan, right? So, you know, in other words, when you are a bad son, a bad daughter, you're actually a good son or a good daughter, right? So that's the koan, right? Being when you don't do your filial duty, you're actually doing your filial duty in a higher way. See, that's the point. So, basically, this would be a scandalous thing to say, right? You know, this is like Lin Ji said, kill your mother and your father. See, so it's like, oh my God, you know, that's pretty scandalous. That's even worse than this, right? But I think that in order to practice Zen, you know, people often come to Zen practice because they are unhappy and they feel something is missing from their life. And, you know, they often focus on themselves as the cause of their unhappiness, right? That is true to some degree, right? We really are causing our own unhappiness much of the time. But it's not just, we're not the only ones screwed up, you know, the larger society is also screwed up. And, you know, it really takes courage to question your society. It really takes courage, you know, to follow the Buddha's teaching takes courage because it means you're separating yourself from the values of your society. You know, I'm not urging everyone to quit your jobs, get divorced, and head for a monastery. I'm talking about a deeper detachment, right? You know. So you know, if you're afraid to say no to the values of your society, it's very difficult for you to walk this path. Right? It's very difficult for you to be free in any way. And it's very difficult to be free from your obstacles. You know, it's difficult to be free from your obstacles. So somebody like Xu Yun, you know, was a bad son. The Buddha was a bad son. You know, the Buddha actually got married and had a child and abandoned his wife and his child. You know, this is usually doesn't turn up in Buddhist literature. It's never said this crudely. But the Buddha abandoned his wife and his child, and never came back, never came home. Right? In fact, his wife and his child eventually became, his wife became a nun, and his son became a very famous monk. The Buddha was a bad son, and Xu Yun was a bad son, and it turns out Kaohsiung is a really bad son, right? Of course, what they're not saying here is, you know, don't be nice to your mother, or don't be nice to your father, or don't be nice to your kids, or, you know, screw them all. That's definitely not the spirit of this. The spirit is that, you know, when we practice Zen, we have to separate ourselves from our society. We have to close the door. We have to come to Sesshin. And that there's no other way to do it. It must be done. And internally, you have to sort of say, I'm stepping away, right? When I was, When I was in graduate school, I fell in love with Zen, and I fell in love with Genki Roshi. You know, he was the most awakened person I had ever met. And I literally, I would just feel happy thinking about him. And at one point he was almost going to be called back to Japan, and I couldn't sleep. I was so worried. I actually had a dream that he'd gone to Japan, and I woke up and I thought, now what? And he didn't go. I'm so glad he didn't go back to Japan. So I fell in love with this, and I actually went to Sesshin and started going to Sesshins. And my graduate director, who was like my boss in graduate school, you know, I came to see him, and he said, "Well, where were you last week?" And I sensed, you know, my spider sense said, "Don't say this," but I did, you know. I said, "Oh, I'm a Zen Buddhist, you know. I went to a sesshin," and I said, "We go to these sesshins, you know." And he was just, he said, you've got to choose. You know, you've got to choose. You're either going to be, you know, a great English professor, or you're going to fritter your time away, you know, in this cult. And he was really upset. And, you know, it was almost like he wasn't going to speak to me, right? So we never discussed it again. I'm so glad I disobeyed him. I was so glad I was such a bad son to him, right? Scholar son, right? Because I completely tuned him out, and thank God, right? You know, my own father didn't approve of this at all. He thought this was a really bad idea. And he would send me critical stuff on Buddhism, you know, just... So I'm so glad I tuned him out, you know. You have to, people don't want you to separate, you know, they don't want you to create a distance or a space. But you have to be disloyal to your society, to be true to your society. You know, it's like by being disloyal to his society, Xu Yun saved his society. You know, it's funny, you know, after the Cultural Revolution, all these people thought Buddhism, there were articles, that scholarly articles said Buddhism is pretty much dead in China. You know, and now by the government says there's like 300 million Buddhists in China, and you know they're not telling the truth, you know, there must be more. So, you know, all of these people are taking their moral guidance from the Buddha's teachings. You know, if Xu Yun hadn't been a bad son, maybe none of that would have happened. And you know, if you come to Sesshin, you're not maybe going to your kid's baseball game, and that's you're a bad person not to do that. But on the other hand, you know, if you can be a wise parent, if you can be, you have more insight and wisdom and patience and generosity. You know, if you're not so fearful about yourself, you can probably be a better parent or a better husband or a better wife. If you're not feeling guilty all the time or ashamed or something like that, you know, or you're caught in these compulsive behaviors that you can't get out of, right? If you're not in self-defense mode all the time, you know, so that just the slightest the slightest headwind makes you feel like you need to fight. You know, all of those things are destructive to everybody, to yourself and to all the people around you. And if you can find the time to close the door, you can find the time to come to Sesshin, which is this most priceless of thing of human inventions, you know. If you can do this, you know, everybody will benefit. If you are a boss, all the people you work with, you won't always make wise decisions, But if you're not making decisions from a place of fear and distrust, you know, you probably make better decisions. And you won't always be like the infallible television father who always has all the answers. But you know, when you don't have the answers, you won't fly into a panic or get mad or, you know, start screaming. You'll just, you know, take another direction, you know. So it's not so simple like, you know, there's a book called After the Enlightenment, The Laundry. But I really don't believe that. You know, you don't need to practice Zen to do the laundry. You know, I think that we're doing the laundry so we can practice Zen. You know, I think the cultivation of wisdom is the highest thing. And if a society doesn't have wisdom, it's doomed, right? It's really doomed. And so you're doing something so important when you don't have to feel arrogant about it. But you know, you're making a sacrifice, a personal sacrifice to come here, but it's not just for yourself, right? You're taking care of your issues, but you're also making society a better place. And you know, when people are not willing to be disloyal to their society, the society goes to hell, actually. It's only the people who are willing to be disloyal to their society who save society, see? So if Xu Yun had been a good son, forget it, you know? You know, I was reading a Chinese monk say, you know, he's about my age, and he said, every Chinese monk and nun of my generation looks to Xu Yun as the model. And he said, if it weren't for him, we don't know what would have happened. So you know, his disobedience benefited the next seven generations of Chinese people, right? And your disobedience can benefit the next seven generations of all the people in your family and your friends and so on. And, you know, if people think ill of you, that's okay. They don't understand. You know, I've said this before. You know, I tell people, somebody in my family wants to invite me to their wedding. I'll say, well, here, let me give you these. You can't, not these weeks. If you want me to be, I give them Sesshin weeks. And I say, if you want me to come, they're not these weeks, right? And they don't have to have me there, right? You know, the ball's in their court, right? And they can say, you're a bad man, but I'm going to do it, right? You have to close the door. And a monk asked Kaoshan, how is it when a person doesn't wear the morning clothes? Kaoshan says, that is the highest fulfillment of filial duty, to be disloyal. See? A monk said, how about after fulfillment of filial duty? And Kaoshan said, Kaoshan likes to get falling down drunk. So please don't get falling down drunk. That's not the way of the ancestors, the Zen ancestors. But he's saying, you know, there's no CEO in the United States who wouldn't be happy if you would work 80 hours a week and ask only for 40 hours of pay, right? They would love to hire you, right? So basically, you know, a lot of the time when we are obedient to our society, it's like we're like a horse pulling a plow, and we put the yoke on ourselves, and we pull, and if we don't pull fast enough, we feel guilty because we're not pulling fast enough. So. You know, creating a you don't have to be a radical, but just stepping back from the values of your society allows you to breathe freely. And if you're not always trying to please somebody called they say, they want, and you're following your true nature, you can be a free woman, you can be a free man, if you dare. But you know, if you don't dare, you're pulling the yoke, right? Okay. Verse. The pure household has no neighbors. For long years, staying in sweeping, not admitting any dust. So it's a little antisocial to do what we're doing. Where the light turns, tilts the moon, remaining at dawn, when the forms of the hexagrams are distinguished there, establishing dawn and spring. So this is the I Ching. This is a reference to the I Ching. You're trusting the universe, you could say. And living in trust of the universe is a wiser life than living in trust of your society. Doesn't mean you aren't going to be a good civic citizen, but, you know, you look to your true nature for your guidance. Walking drunk, singing crazily, turban hanging down, ambling with tousled hair, who cares? In great peace, with no concerns, a man falling down drunk.